Kingslayer. And what a king he was! Here's to Aerys Targaryen, the second of his name, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, protector of the realm, and to the sword I shoved in his back. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners. To the White Book, returning after our hiatus this month, or well, rather last month. Gosh, it's been a whole month since we've had an episode out there. The holidays are quite a time to try and get things out in front of people. So thanks for sticking with us. So let's see, this is episode 319. I'm Will. Joining me, of course, this week, we're still not out of all of the madness of this time of year, so our stalwart stand-in has joined us here. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Scott. I've been on here third time now, third time's a charm, so hopefully I'll say something that'll wow everyone.
Oh, I think you do every week. Or every time.
Every week. Right? I'm the new Will, apparently, the only person who comes on every week.
There we go. Well, I mean, you are available very often, it sounds like. So, you know, I think the stalwart stand-in Scott has a really nice alliteration to it. I kind of dig it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I think I'm probably one of the few single people here that helps a lot to be available.
For sure. Well, thanks for jumping in then. We've got actually I think quite a bit of ground to cover from the last month, so why don't we jump right into it here.
I'm happy to. Let's jump.
It's like I haven't talked for a while here. I'm just stumbling all over my own words. This is terrible.
So first, Journey to Old Town. We're not going to do the complete chapter pack review, but the card's been out for a little bit. What do you think about the card so far, Will? What stood out to you?
You know, there's several cards in here that stood out to me. For sure. I think overall there's a really interesting power level available in this pack. I think it's definitely one of the higher ones that we've seen in the game so far. Part of me wishes we were really delving into the nitty-gritty on all of these, but I think that's not particularly timely for the listeners at this point, and is really kind of a lot to kind of kick on through here. So, you know, I think I'm maybe going to hit on one of my highlight cards here out of the pack. Or maybe my vote for strongest card out of that pack.
I think those are two very different things with this pack.
I think that is true. That's true. We may add the other category if we want. But I think actually my vote for strongest at the moment, it may surprise people that I'm going to choose this as number one, though I think it's up there for a lot of folks. I'm going to go with Consuming Flames. Go ahead.
No, I don't think it's that surprising for anyone. I think it's up there for strongest. Definitely not something I'm happy exists, because I think we've reached the point where we have way too much burn in the game, and Targ is far and away number one house with their flea bottom usage, which is something else we can go into another time, but it's definitely up there, top three strongest.
Yeah, it's really up there, and part of me picking this card, I think, is my amazement that we got the card. You know, in a vacuum, not considering the rest of the card pool at large, just kind of considering house themes, I love it, right? You know, two cost to give somebody kind of a medium range burn effect, and you have to ditch another card. Like, you know, on the one hand, that sort of balances it. It costs two cards to do it, to remove a card from your opponent's side, so you're still at a net loss, but it plays into some of the Targaryen's less cards in hand and recursion type effects, so you can work them to offset it. You know, I like that in a vacuum. It feels, in my mind, a lot like a Magic the Gathering inspired card design. Like, you know, isn't there at least one red bolt spell that has this exact text? Or close
enough?
You're
asking the wrong person.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't have that exact text, but, you know, translated between games, it would be very close. You know, so I like it in that regard. But in the context of the whole card pool, they've gotten so much burn and such strong options lately. And, you know, speaking of, I kind of feel like we need a different term to kind of differentiate between non-terminal and terminal burn. That's as easy as just saying burn. I don't know what that might be, but
terminal and non-terminal sound fine.
Yeah, but then I have to, it's a lot of syllables to say non-terminal burn. It's just, man, I'm American. I want to shorten that as much as possible.
But, well, every turn's the blood of the dragon turn, so don't worry about it. Everything's terminal.
There you go. That's fair. But they've just gotten so much lately. I thought that the game was going to be taking some heavy lessons from first edition. And it really seemed like it early on that burn was going to be much more metered. But I've really watched burn become an issue in two prior editions of this game, the CCG and first edition. And it worries me a little bit that they're kind of throwing that caution to the wind over the course of the last year. Not sure I like that. I'm afraid it's going to push us in the direction of finally having a restricted list or something. Maybe not immediately, but I think it's another nail in that coffin, so to speak.
I wanted a restricted list before this was out, so I'm fine with that. We don't know. We'll get into it a little bit, that there is going to be a new Danny in a couple packs when we get into that trap pack review. But, I mean, new Danny most likely signifies new ways to burn things. And that's the last thing we need right now. But besides that, Targ has gotten so many good cards lately. There was a time, probably after Starkbox, where they were the weakest house. Now they're far and away the best house, and this just helps solidify that.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm curious. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Scott. I know not too terribly long ago, you had a real beef with duplicates.
And I still do.
In the game. Okay, I didn't know if that would alter at all when burn becomes so strong and prevalent and just chews right through them.
I have a problem with the the prevalence of the burn to you now. So,
gotcha. So it's just both ends of that spectrum are a problem. They don't cancel out.
They don't cancel out. The problem with dupes is it just creates more variants, which we have enough of a problem of now anyway, as we're getting more pillage tech too. That's going, of course, more variants. Things like Corpse Lake and Pillage, I'm sure, will be pushed more as we see the new Asha and King's Moot. So we're taking away the player skill there, I think. But that makes me happy about one other Greyjoy card in this pack. Trisbotli is something that makes me happy.
Would he be your pick for best card? Or
he's
just
not
favorite?
The best card, for sure. There's some really strong cards in this pack. But he is up there for my favorite cards.
Okay.
Just because he changes the way we play the game and the prevalence of I just need three copies of this Drac or three copies of this and not turn my big guy sideways, but play the cards that are at the higher power level and do whatever. And he makes you think until he's off the board, he's going to edit things. Plus he helps with all the Flea Bottom shenanigans, and Flea Bottom's another card that's a problem.
He does. He does. Do you think he reins in the combo decks that want to abuse their discard piles at all?
No, because he's once per round. If he's once per phase.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking as well. I think he goes a lot further in mucking with other decks with, shall we say, more straightforward game plans, particularly something on kind of a control-y end of a spectrum that really needs to count on some events or something, but doesn't necessarily rein in the combos.
Yeah, I think he reins in just... He makes you think about more ways to play and consider things more on the board, which is really good. It requires player skill, and it requires deck-building skill into consideration if he's in the meta. I don't think he changes the meta, but he changes the way we think, which... is not the level of like a plot like Valid or Harris, which changes the way we think when we deck build, changes the meta, changes everything, but changes how we think when we see him on the board. We have to think about how we're playing and take things away from you being able to flea bottom them in.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's kind of interesting in my mind. He almost is a bigger kind of draw to me to consider a pillage deck, so to speak, than some of the other stuff we've seen so far, like, say, Tywin. I mean, sure, that works interestingly together, but I think his upside on dumping a bunch of cards quickly into your opponent's discard pile is, I don't know, pushes that direction harder than some of the other things we've seen.
He helps take use of it. I don't think you should. That's the way he should be looked at, though. I think he is a control answer. You don't need pillage to make him good. Like, you don't need to be running a pillage deck. You could be running old Asha, not new Asha, and he's good. He actually, in a way, doesn't work with new Asha because he's taking things out of the discard where she wants them there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I was just thinking more about increased options to...
Remove from game, for sure.
Yeah. Remove from game. I was trying to think of a fun ability, you know, fun terminology for RFG. That to forbid or something like that. Well, RFG works, but I was trying to think of something to encapsulate his the prohibition portion of his effect.
Prohibition. That's what we're calling from now on.
There you go. That's a lot of syllables too. How about just prohibit?
Well, then it's a verb. He prohibits cards. Now yeah. Is prohibition.
Yeah. For him to prohibit. Sure, that works.
So
for me, anyway.
We have the new worst card in the game in this pack. Very exciting.
Ooh, the new worst card. You know, I am curious which one you're going to pick. I actually debated a little bit here on what I was going to pick. So what's your pick?
Well, I wasn't talking about worst card in the pack. I'm talking worst card in the entire game.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. Okay, tell me more.
When would you ever play Kingslayer? Ever.
Ever. You know, maybe melee, maybe one copy in some kind of Lanny melee deck.
What guard characters are you playing? You're playing the new hound, I guess. You don't want the old hound.
Yeah, you're
playing
maybe.
The bad Jamie.
You're definitely not playing the bad Jamie. You know, you might be playing what's his face that jumps in characters from hand. I definitely had that cause some issues.
Oh, Kettle Black
in melee.
See Kingsguard?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty
so
sure.
You draw Kettle Black, and this is the same time.
Yes.
For a nominal effect with a huge
for a yeah a like conditional kill effect with a huge downside. Not great.
Worst card in the game.
It's pretty darn bad. It's pretty darn bad. That was, I think, in the end, my final choice. But I did have a bit of consideration for Brightwater Knight. I think the more expensive character reducers we've seen so far, where you're, you know, trading something to get a bigger reduction, have not really panned out so far. And I think I see Brightwater Knight continuing that tradition.
Oh,
you've got so many other knights. What's that?
No, I don't think he's good. We also forgot to mention that Kingslayer is terminal, because
yes.
Everything else bad about it, let's say terminal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's limit once per game, so, you know, does it even... Would it even matter if it didn't have terminal?
I mean, if it didn't have terminal... I'm not a rule expert. I don't know Alex Hines, but then you might be able to play it again, and then it isn't once per game then? Or it still could be intrigue claim or something. After.
Yeah, that's fair. And then they wouldn't get their 2 power for discarding that from your hand, would they?
No, I mean, all these things. This is just a great
card. It's a terrible card. Come on. We can be honest. We can be honest here.
I mean, I said it's the worst card in the game, and I actually think it might be. But cards that make me happy, besides that, are Black Ears is surprisingly amazing in Clansmen. It's basically having another Burn Man, because things will die. Have you played Black Ears with Clansmen? It is a lot of fun.
I have not yet. I've actually been so busy with everything. I've not had the chance to play Thrones since we went on break, but I'm super excited that I'm going to be able to devote time to just hammering out a ton of games this coming Saturday. So I'll have to give this a try.
Okay.
Also, by the way, answer the Kingslayer question, it's a per copy limit, so if it didn't have terminal, then yes, you'd be able to trigger it again every time it came into play.
Yeah, because we'd still play it then.
Yeah.
Old Town is an obnoxious card that we shouldn't have printed.
It's a very interesting one. It's another one that I don't know, feels kind of magic-y to me. Is it weird that like half of the card designs these days just kind of scream magic to me? Because that's what we get with a different designer. Not that I'm knocking it, it's just gives me that sort of vibe.
I don't know. I just think it's an awful card for the game. I can build a deck of 15 or so locations and 40 or so characters and just name character. Draw characters, play mace, move things with mace, banter bridge more things in, and it's fun. It's tons of fun.
You sound so uncertain.
I'm super uncertain.
Is it going to be the card that makes Greensight a playable agenda? Are you going to be playing that out of Greensight so you always know?
No, people have been playing it with HRD banter bridge. I'm not even kidding. It's actually
okay.
That. People made Bitterbridge good. All the British will be happy.
Man, I tried to come up with a way to make Greenside good and shot down that fast.
No, but soon, later in this podcast, when we talk about the Faith Militants, we could discuss that agenda, which is better than Greenside.
Yeah, I think that definitely stands a lot more potential.
So I think the only other House of Black and White, I do think, is a very good card, but the other card, which Aaron would be very upset if we didn't mention, would be Arion, who is very, very good. Unfortunately, the two best characters Martell has have the same name.
Almost like they did that on purpose.
I mean, I don't know. Martell has so many other great characters.
You mean in the fluff or in the game?
In the game. But no, she's very, very good. Clearly, she changes, creates more play styles. I've played a lot of her, and she's fun. But in the fluff, they are one of the smaller houses for exciting character names. I guess they definitely don't like have Stark amount of uniques, not if that matters.
Well, we haven't really had much in the way of the novels that even takes place in Dorne, so there's less to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, there's always more sand snakes.
I suppose there are. They seem to be going kind of a different way with some of the sand snake stuff, though. But I could see them kind of making this work. If nothing else, Harmon Uller would make her slightly cheaper to ambush back in that case, to keep bouncing.
Oh, if we named her something else?
Yeah. If she was a sand snake.
I don't think she'd be the ability. Yeah, does this ability scream Arion, like, in a fluff perspective?
You know, I'm not really feeling that it does, but I'm not really feeling that the Corset one does.
No, not either.
They've just kind of decided that Arion in general is going to have these return to hand effects, but it does not feel very Nedley to me at all.
Yeah, I mean, we could have another discussion if you want to have a fluff episode where we could discuss what these cards should be. No Martell character is screaming out to me should have either of these effects. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Hey, I think a fluff episode where we tackled some of the uniques like that would be a lot of fun. I think sure. We should do it.
We should. Roy's better at this fluff stuff than I am, but
that's true. We'll be sure to get him on for that one. Yes, he's sounds off.
Good.
I don't know. Thrones War stuff tonight.
I know. Well, some things are more important than others, I guess.
I suppose. I know where your loyalty lies. Thanks, Scott.
I'm a traitor to the crown.
Well, in that case, then, I think we might as well, unless there's anything else that you really wanted to hit on here in Journey to Old Town, maybe kick on over to our next.
Have heard enough HRD talk, but
yeah, it's kind of been all over the place in discussion these days, right? We're probably remiss not to at least acknowledge it, though. It's a big agenda for the game.
Yeah, I agree. That's all I really got. I mean, I can say more, but I'm sure you've heard everything.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks have heard stuff, you know, or seen one analysis or another somewhere, or muddled through Luke's goodbye episode and listened to our arguments about why House with the Red Door is or isn't a shadow of its first edition self. But I think the fact remains that from sheer deck building possibilities and kind of archetype broadening, no other agenda in the game comes anywhere near this. So no matter how anything else shakes out, I think it is always going to be a consideration, because there's always going to be new locations coming out that you can use with it. And that's a whole new ballgame every time.
I would agree.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and kick it over here to the announcement of the next chapter pack. This is further along in the cycle than that. What is this, pack 5? No. Pack 5. Pack 5.
So we got 2 more packs.
Yeah, this one is for the Faith Militant. And I'm already intrigued by this one because we've had yet another agenda previewed here in the announcement article. There's several other cards, of course, as well. But I know you have some thoughts on the agenda. But before we even get there, I just want to say, despite relative like power level differences, I am excited that we're getting a boatload of agendas this cycle. I think my tune has really changed in second edition, and I want more. I want agendas out there because they shake up decks more than anything else.
I don't think Greenside would shake anything up.
Well, that's why I was saying, you know, power level aside, I'm glad they're at least getting more in front of us. Imagine if they were only releasing like one per box and Greensight was the one in the next box. How excited would you be about that?
Almost as excited as I was about Conclave. Conclave's a little better.
You know, I've had some fun with a Targ Conclave deck of mine. I'm hoping to get some more games in with that Saturday, actually. So
no, I don't think Conclave is that awful. I've played it, but I think it's below the power level for an agenda.
Yeah, there are probably superior options to be had, but you know, I've got a while till I've got a store championship around here. It's time to be experimental, right?
I got lists for you to play that are good.
Hey, okay. Now that sounds like a plan when it gets there for the actual championships. We'll talk.
All right. Try to make Barra good. That should be your experiment. I actually
make Barra good?
This agenda could make Barra good.
Even aside from this agenda, I don't want to try and toot my horn into something, you know, overbearing, but I think I've played enough Neil in years of the game that I could do respectably with Barra. I'm not going to say I'm going to go win, but I don't feel like I would embarrass myself with even at this point with Barra.
The thing is, I mean, we can get into a deeper philosophical conversation about the game and cards that are bad for the game, but as long as Plaza of Pride is an evergreen card that has no restricted list, Barra's in trouble because if you underpower Neil and make Neil not important because you're making more stand, then everything Barra does besides win Dom with a neutral card doesn't work. Because I'll just stand the dude. That I think is the biggest problem with Barra now, not the fact that Neil is bad, but the fact that stand is good, so you underpower Neil.
Well, yeah. I mean, and stand is always going to be good, I think. I think that issue is compounded a little bit by everything else that Targaryen has that has it riding so high on the horse, so to speak, at the moment. If that particular card was in some other house that was going a different direction, I don't know, say Greyjoy or Stark, I think it would change that perception a little bit.
If there was no Fleet Bottom, it'd be better, but I also just think it's an undercosted card.
Oh, yes. Wait, sorry, was that Fleet Bottom or Plaza of Pride?
They both are.
So true. So true.
But anyway, about the agenda, what can make Barra good? I think people...
Yeah. Well, here, real quick, just so listeners have it in front of them, would you mind reading the text on the Faith Militant so they've got that?
Sure. It's a neutral agenda with the 7 trait. The 7 characters and locations you control cannot gain power. Reaction. After you win a challenge, kneel your faction card to move 1 power from the losing opponent's faction card to participating the 7 character you control. So there aren't that many of the seven characters right now. There's one more in this pack, at least, that we've had spoiled. But people seem to be thinking this agenda is about power gain, which I think is the wrong way to look at this agenda. The fact that you're taking this off your opponent's house is taking power away from them. And that pushes Barra's game a lot. If you have this and you have Chamber going, you're taking two power from them a turn. Then you're probably running three Traitor to the Crown, three Red Keep. So you're probably drawing two a turn. If things are going right, of course, this is all if things are going right. And you are probably nailing one of their dudes or something, and you're only caring about the power challenge, and you're taking two power off a turn. That's pretty strong. I think it's a control shell agenda more so than it is a power gain agenda, which people aren't seeing.
I agree with that entirely, actually. That was definitely my thought process when I first started kind of working my way through this card mentally as well. But then I went another step past that, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on this next step. So the Faith Militant then winds up looking like a control card, right? Playing toward these decks that want to drag the game out more, keep opponents from pulling ahead, and kind of bleed that away, evaporate it, as the case may be. But I started thinking about that more, and the pacing in second edition, I just can't help but think that a lot of those decks even are better served by more, let's say, speedy pieces of their own rather than pieces to slow the opponent down. I don't know. This is not great pacing compared to even just having a couple extra renowned characters in your deck based on what I've seen out of seven characters right now.
Oh, I don't think that at all. I've been playing a lot of Martell and no one has renown. And I lose until I win. It's basically what happens. But I've also been the best Barra deck I've seen recently that I've been playing cares about no challenge besides the power challenge. It'll lose every other challenge every turn. And it purposely does. It just wins Dom and wins power. And I think that's what this type of agenda would want to do. It just wants your opponent not to be able to win to gain a lot of power, which is what that deck would do, not let power challenges go by. And doesn't run any renown, doesn't care about it, doesn't need it. And then event, and then just by winning power or winning an oppose, grinds the game down. There are other cards that would still work, like in Martell, as I mentioned. Dorne's game works with this agenda. It doesn't stop Dorne's game from working as a closer. King's Moot and Greyjoy would work with this agenda. It doesn't stop that from being a closer, if you are worried about that. But I've played many attrition decks. Like a deck like Night's Watch Wolf, which was popular for a while and still isn't that unpopular, doesn't have any renown. It just wins on attrition. And this would just further the attrition by taking more power off the opponent's house now.
I think it certainly can. It does the rest of the character base that you're committing to make that happen, though, because it only works with seven characters. Does the rest of that justify it? Because you're also using up a not insubstantial amount of deck slots to make that happen. And that's also part of my consideration where, well, hey, if I need to make this consistent, what number of the seven characters am I looking at minimum to actually make that consistent? And then what's my trade-off that I'm losing in not only, characters that gain power by their own ability of one kind or another, but also what's my opportunity cost on the rest of the deck? I don't know, 12 the seven characters and locations is probably going to be minimum to make this consistent.
We only care about the characters, right? I mean,
well, the agenda says characters and locations, so it makes me think that we're probably going to see a location in this cycle for the seven that gains power. I don't know what, but it seems to be foreshadowing it.
It has to be a participating seven character you control.
Yes.
You're not going to have a participating seven character that's a location.
No. Well, it says non-seven characters in locations you control cannot gain power. That's the first thing.
Oh, that's the thing.
I'm just saying that's another way that you could be gaining power that I'm thinking about. But character-wise, you're right. You need them for the reaction.
For the reaction, you need that. I think it's more just taking away things like what's the Lannister, whenever you win an intrigue, gain a power, things like that. Corpse Lake, things like that.
It very well could. Though I could see a great sept that gained you power somehow from a Nedley perspective, certainly.
Yeah. So right now Stark probably is the only house that has enough characters to substantiate it. I'm assuming there'll be more seven neutrals because they're printing this and they usually do things together, but you're for sure running three Begging Brother because it's something people run three of a lot without any type of extra benefit. It's just a really good card. You're probably
devout free riders to make this happen.
Depends on what they're printing. You're probably running some High Sparrow. Silent Sisters are 7/2. They get good with a long game.
Right, they do. Though I need to be winning challenges early to make that agenda happen, so that could be a little trickier with the sisters in, you know, the first couple turns.
I mean, you're going to Valor, most likely.
Sure. I probably will at some point. Not all board states. And in fact, I think not many necessitate me doing it turn one, though.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're running Naga's Ribs.
I'm looking at mixing religious traits here, and then it's, I think, really getting complicated.
I think we need probably one or two more good neutrals to make any faction be able to do it. Right now, only Stark can really do it by our current card pool, but I'm assuming that we'll get more seven. It seems like a relatively fair assumption to me.
Probably so. So, I mean, I think some of my verdict is out based on what other characters we see, because I just don't feel particularly confident in the character base we have with the seven right now to justify it, because they have to go hand in hand in my mind.
I think that also, it also comes down to how good do you think the High Sparrow is?
Not as good as the kind of wow factor of reading his ability the first time gives you. It's interesting, for sure. But
he shuts down combo. If you wanted a card that shuts down combo,
yes. And I'm afraid he is just going to be that silver bullet when you're worried about combo. To a certain extent, he hits just generic Tyrell good stuff as well. You know, they want to count a bunch of gold and draw a bunch of cards too.
I mean, people are running counting coppers.
Uh huh.
This shuts down that. I think he's
really sort good. Of, yeah. He caps their draw anyway. They can still draw from their counting coppers, but nothing past that.
Yeah, so they're on their counting coppers turn, they're going to draw one extra card than they would have on a normal draw turn.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
I think there's definitely something to be said for that. He's a 5/3 body, though, and with Targ as big as force in the field right now, as we were talking about, does he stick? I mean, I feel like nightmares follow.
I think the only thing that makes that a concern is the Crown of Gold, which is a stupid card too. But I just think you don't challenge with him against Tark. He sits on the side.
Well, then he's a character I can't be using to trigger the Faith Militant agenda.
Oh, no. I mean, that's in one matchup for sure. Okay. But yes, that's correct. But I think in general, if you have a deck that really wants the High Sparrow against Tark, you're not going to challenge. But I think the High Sparrow is very the seven. I do think he's a good card. I'm actually interested in trying him with Box Aemon. I think can be interesting, keeping, you know, a very small board state and the challenge is very light, and getting Box Aemon to get you some extra claim. I think that can be interesting. I think there are decks that'll want this High Sparrow. I'm not sure the power level if you're going to want your deck to rely on a body like his, though.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think he's going to be a build-around sort of card. He's definitely more of an answer. Well, you know, this might be a problem, so I'm going to include it. You know. Let's see. What else here? We did, I guess, also get the 7 event preview, the Song of the Seven. Does that factor into your thoughts there, other than having some really sweet
art? On the agenda? I don't think it does anything for the agenda. I think it's a good card.
Yeah, I don't think it really does anything particular with the agenda either.
I mean, if you're doing that playstyle, then maybe if there's a lot of rush in the meta, you'll play with that agenda because it does slow the game down a little bit too in your favor, but it's not going to push that deck.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it just feels like, especially those decks that do want to push some kind of control, don't need just another card to slow the game down more, that doesn't do anything else other than slow the game down. And you have to have a 7 character as well. Now, however, I do see this being very interesting in Melee, depending on what other kind of 7 characters we get. If I can reasonably include enough of those that I can snipe 2 power off of one of my opponents just for losing dominance, I think that's going to be a pretty spicy little play.
I'll let you have your Melee, and I can't say much about playing good Melee, so listen to Will.
There we go. I mean, it all still just boils down to what the character base is going to be. I would love to see like a 3 or 4 cost military intrigue, the 7 non-unique, like whatever their knightly order is called that I can't think of at the moment.
Give me Faith Militant.
Was that actually the order? I was thinking that there was a specifically knight order. Like the Faith Militant was the movement as a whole, and then there was a specific order that Lancel joined.
The Warrior Sons?
There we go, the Warrior Sons. Thank you. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Give me a Warrior Sons that's a military intrigue in somewhere in the low to mid cost range, and I think I get a lot more interested.
I think they need. So I'm viewing this as like a wildling type of neutral character base, I'm thinking. So I think they need the equivalent of the wildling horde, right? They need the 5 coster, so it can't get watered, it can't get first node.
Ooh,
it'll stay on the board and be just a big body that'll win challenges for this agenda. Because if it's a 5 for 5 like wildling horde with some upside that can boost it, obviously not the faction card Neil, that'd be very bad for this agenda.
Yeah.
But some sort of thing, I think that's what this agenda needs. It just needs a big body. A neutral big body that's non-unique, so if one dies, more can come in.
Exactly.
That's the biggest problem it has.
Yeah.
If you have 3 Begging Brother, 3 of that dude, if he's 5 or higher, so he can't get first nor awarded. I think that's good. Then you could make the rest with the Valkyrie Riders and whatever else you have lying around.
Extra bonus points if it has another positive trait like Knight, like the Warrior Sons would have. Hint, hint. You know.
What if it's Poor Fellows? Isn't that the other branch?
Very possibly.
I think they're called the Poor Fellows, but it's been a while since I read.
It's been way too long since I've read it. Yeah, they were part of the Faith Militant. Otherwise,
it is the Poor Fellows.
The Stars. Hmm. There we go.
There you go. So the other cards in this pack are still good too. I don't know what this Danny and this Aria are. They're obviously going to have to be pretty good to replace the other two.
Uh huh.
But Cold Hands.
Yeah.
You play first edition. I didn't.
Cold Hands is frustrating, and is probably going to be even more so in second edition, particularly in the faction it's in. You think you've got a character that can actually start pushing some challenges against Night's Watch, say goodbye to them. But just in general, it resetting, you know, power totals on characters and getting rid of attachments and so on is very strong.
Yes, Night's Watch Wolf loves him. The Faith Militant, if you're playing Night's Watch, Faith Militant loves him. He's a very good card. I'm curious to see how the price point works with him, because it, some ways that it's a tad expensive. You have to have a character that you're going to remove from the game for N5 cost, and then the body isn't that good. When he's good, he's going to be really good, but there might be times I'm worried that you're going to see him in your hand and you're going to be like, I don't want this at all.
Now, I think, especially in Night's Watch, it's going to be rare that I don't have something where I'm willing to make the trade. Heck, even something as valuable as ditching my draw engine in a Raven to get rid of my opponent's Danny or Tywin or something, or even stuff at, you know, more mid cost points like a Tyrion. I think as a trade, I'm very willing to make.
Well, there's definitely times where you definitely want him. But, like, how many copies do you run? You just run the one?
With that cannot be saved, maybe. I might go as high as two. I don't play the full complement of three, though, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm curious. Because there's times he's going to be semi a dead draw if you're kind of winning. I still believe that. And if you're playing against a weenie deck that just has like a Northern Refugee and a Devout Free Rider and whatever else on the board, you're just like, it's almost card disadvantage for me. So we'll see.
We'll see.
I do think Cersei's Informer is really, really good.
Had to reread that ability here for me, for any listeners that are curious about that.
Oh, sorry.
No,
sorry.
That's okay. I was actually rereading it. I was not giving you grief. it's an interesting bestow card. Bestow 3 and has just a straight up action to move one gold from it to another spy card you control to draw one card and then choose and discard.
A non-spy.
Sorry, that's what I get for having my window side by side. A little hard to read.
If it was a spy, if it was another spy, it'd be bad because I can't think of another bestow spy.
Right, right. But still, non-spy card. You just need yourself some other bestow cards that you want to load up here.
So the reason why I think it's really good is the Iron Bank has proven to be a really good card. And the Iron Bank's downside basically is you have to wait for the numbers to increase substantially for it to go up to a good amount. But plus one, but then you double it basically, right? So if you turn one, bestowed one in your Iron Bank, you're going to move one from her. You automatically save yourself a turn of Iron Bank. Mm-hmm. Then every time you add one more, you're speeding up that money onto the Iron Bank, which basically is going to replace your marshalling money and accelerate your income too. Crazy feats. I've had a point in one game where I got 160 gold on the Iron Bank.
That sounds awesome.
The Iron Bank can grow, and this will help it grow fast. But also, there's other cards that, you know, their caps are there for a reason, and this is not a loyal card. So cards like Ricasso can get ridiculous, even though he's not, like, the most loved card. If you get Ricasso, then you get Adorn's Game Off. Ricasso has a cap for a reason, and you're going over that cap. It's the same reason why Targ players are playing that plot that lets you extra bestow. It can add more to Astapor. Mm-hmm. It goes over the caps. Ashmark, which is in faction for Lanny, loves this too.
Oh yeah, anything to really push that up there is going to be fun.
People saw this and I think are sleeping on this too, like the Faith Militant, but I think this is very good. And actually, and plus card filtering, which is good.
Yeah, no, I'm all for kind of the looting style effect, to steal the term from Magic, drawing a card and then discarding a card. And I think card filtering that way can be very nearly as strong as just straight draw.
Yeah, Old Town of Bloom is proven to be a very good card, and this is the similar sort of thing.
Yeah, a little slower, little clunkier, but
you're getting the other upside. It's just the bonus to the other upside.
Yeah, similar enough, I'm intrigued to explore it.
Yes, I like this card. I don't know what the Tyrell card is behind her, but she's good.
It's some reused art from first edition, but I sure couldn't tell you what it is. Looks like while something and reduce something by one. I'm gonna guess, knowing
some sort of chud.
Yeah, it's some kind of cost reduction chud. Knowing Tyrell, it's probably gonna be like while you have a summer plot revealed, reduce, I don't know, the cost of something by one. But
yeah, it's gonna be summer ladies or knights, something like that.
Yeah. While there's a song in your discard pile, reduce the cost of song events you play by one. Calling it now, it's going to be amazing.
Maybe your song deck will finally come together.
Yeah, well, that might make my janky play-by-the-rules, so to speak, song deck come together. The problem is that's going to just flat bust the combo decks, so... Oh, well.
Can't have too much.
Yeah. Well, there you go, folks. FFG will definitely not print whatever card I just made up.
You gotta win the World Championship and get your card. And that'll be your champ card, man.
Oh, no. I've already got lots of other ideas for my champ card. Lots of other ideas. Man, I've had a... Jeez, it's 2018. I've had almost 16 years to plan that out. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, in that case, let's move on to a new topic that's not nearly as sobering as that thought. Okay, so we've just got a few other kind of housekeeping items to hit this week, and then we'll consider ourselves caught up from happenings during the holiday break. So one I really want to hit on for sure is a new Thrones website that is at www.thrones.com. agot.cards. So that's www.agot.cards. Project I had been working on for a while, hoping to get folks over there using the event listing system, if nothing else, so that it is easily searchable and filterable for folks to find stuff. We've been trying to pull in every possible game night and store championship we're aware of. It can import Facebook events very, very easily from the back end, where folks can submit them from the front end. So should be good. It's got a number of other features. Folks can submit their own articles and such. We've got a few more lined up. Forums, of course, in the articles and forums, you can tag card titles, so they pop up with the Thrones DB tooltip with their text and everything. But the last kind of killer feature there I'm hoping for at the moment is that folks earn gold, actually, as they participate. They comment, discuss, as they submit articles, you get more for submitting things. And that gold then can be spent on the site store for promo cards. We've got some promo cards already lined up. Four plots at the moment using non-FFG, not only non-FFG art, but also non-FFG template resources. So thanks to Mike for that. I would say your last name, but I'm sure I'll butcher it terribly. So we're hoping to get more up there, some events and other things, and keep broadening that store. So come check it out. See what's going on. And I think the other thing to note with that is it's something I had been working on for a few months. And as I started reaching out to other folks to find some admins and moderators, other people around the globe to help stay on top of filling in events and approving articles as they're submitted and making sure they're not spam, all that sort of thing, I became aware that there was another very similar project going on, led by Andreas Aldrin, known as Buzz. And so I just wanted to throw a shout out their direction. There was some talk about figuring out a path forward, potentially them pulling in info from here or different things. We'll see if anything happens there, but they're in planning stages, and I had this site pretty much ready to go, so I went ahead and put it out there for folks to start listing events and finding things, because store championship season is here and people keep asking where they can find events. So we'll see what the future holds, but I'm hoping that this is a useful tool for the community. So, yeah, really.
Go get involved, get renowned on the internet.
Exactly. Earn yourself some promo cards, really, is what it boils down to. Okay, other than that, we also have a meme contest going on. This is the 2018 meme contest. We've done one of these during the winter of the last few years. We've had a lot of funny stuff submitted in prior years. So by all means, drop something in. We're going to be giving out a deck box to both the winner and runner-up. But how do you get to that point, listeners? You're going to send that meme to us in a private direct message on Facebook or by emailing us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. We don't want them posted out in public yet, because we're going to collect them all into a gallery on our Facebook page and upload them and unveil them all at once, and then let folks go in and vote on the ones that they like the best by liking their particular images in the gallery on Facebook. So we're going to let you guys submit through January 22nd. Then we'll get them up on our gallery there, and then you'll have until February 5th to vote. So it's been a lot of fun in the past, and I hope it is this year too. All right, and last but not least in the announcement field, we're working on revising and updating the Patreon reward system and scheme. I think most everybody at this point has gotten their first batch of rewards, and I'm looking at updating both so that these folks have a reason to continue supporting after that, and to make it more easily manageable on my end. So here's my apology to supporters for not being as active with that as I could or should have, and you know, there being some delays on getting some of that support sent out. So I'd like to revise and revamp some of this stuff so that it's easier to stay on top of, so that nothing falls behind for you guys. So step one is that we have a Facebook patron-only group that we are starting to put together so we can talk behind the scenes about what's coming up in upcoming episodes, get feedback from you guys, probably post some deck lists and different things like that. So that is step one. Hopefully stay tuned for more tweaks and updates after that. And last but not least, props and slops. Time to let Scott talk again, since I've just been monologuing for the past, like, I don't know, 15 minutes? Something like that.
Oh, no, it's fine. I don't even have anything especially to prop and slop.
You haven't watched any good movies or TV shows lately, or just blown somebody out in Game of Thrones with a particular card, or been blown out by one that you'd really love to slop?
I will slop the dupes and the Tomb of Fern and Fleabottom and Plaza Prize.
I'm kind of noticing there must be one specific deck here that you're really just slopping basically every card in it, huh?
No, this is too much burn. We just have to restrict which. You cannot play Drac and Consuming Flames together. Like, that'd be fine. Things like that. But besides that, dupes are a problem for every house.
Okay, that's fair. Let's see. What would I do? You know, I guess I would be remiss if I didn't mention the big one since we went on break. That would be Star Wars: The Last Jedi. I don't want to delve into a huge, crazy discussion there, but I will just say I came out of it very conflicted and kind of not feeling great about it. So, in general, I think I give it a slop.
That's upsetting. I have not seen it, but
I was going to say, I'm sure if you've been on the internet at all, you've seen most every angle debated ad nauseum by now.
I haven't seen a Star Wars movie in years.
Well, I wouldn't start here then. And that has nothing to do with this specific movie. I would just, at the very least, watch The Force Awakens first.
The original three without the prequels and stuff.
You know, that's actually probably...
will remain untainted.
Just go out on a high note. Don't mess with anything else. Yes. Good man.
my childhood can live on.
What else? I would also, I think, throw out a prop to Oathbringer by Brandon Sanderson. Started working on that recently here. I've not finished it yet, so I can't tell you the whole review, but I've pretty well loved everything else of his that I've read, and this promises to be a wild ride as well. So,
well, you know you've played too much Thrones when you started saying Oathbringer, and I thought you were going to talk about Oathkeeper.
Oh, right. The yeah, I had forgotten about that naming similarity for a moment there. There's only so many really good fantasy names you can come up with.
Yeah, I mean, is Oathbringer a sword?
No, I think it's a title of an in-world book, actually. See, that seems to be the naming convention with this series. He's naming them all after in-world books.
Okay, so it's acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of magic swords, so to speak, in there, but I don't believe this is one of them. Well, do you have anything else you wanted to hit on this week?
No, I think we're good. Enjoy your store champs, people. Apparently, I hate cards, so don't bring cards.
Well, only if you're going to be somewhere Scott is. If you're going to be somewhere else, go for it.
I control the entire U.S. meta. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, when you have a platform like this and our hundreds of listeners.
Yeah, for real. That's all I got for you. But if you have more questions, email Will. He'll get them to me about all the reasons why you shouldn't play Targ.
Of which there are many. Well, thanks for being on and joining us here. I guess that's the danger zone. And that closes